Chapter 16. Their first free and frantic caresses had been preceded by a brief period of strange craftiness, of cringing stealth. The masked offender was Vaughn, but her passive acceptance of the poor boy's behavior seemed tacitly to acknowledge its disreputable and even monstrous nature. A few weeks later, both were to regard that phase of his courtship with amused condescension. At the time, however, its implicit cowardice puzzled her and distressed him, mainly because he was keenly conscious of her being puzzled. Although Vaughn had never had the occasion to witness anything close to virginal revolt on the part of Ada, not an easily frightened or over-fastidious little girl, je raffole de tout ce qui rampe, he could rely on two or three dreadful dreams to imagine her, in real or at least responsible life, recoiling with a wild look as she left his lust in the lurch to summon her governess or mother or a gigantic footman, not existing in the house but killable in the dream, punchable with sharp-ringed knuckles, puncturable like a bladder of blood, after which he knew he would be expelled from Ardis. In Ada's hand, I vehemently object to that not over-fastidious. It is unfair, in fact, and fuzzy in fancy. Van's marginal note, sorry, puss, that must stay. But even if he were to will himself to mock that image so as to blast it out of all consciousness, he could not feel proud of his conduct. In those actual undercover dealings of his with Ada, by doing what he did and the way he did it, with that unpublished relish, he seemed to himself to be either taking advantage of her innocence or else inducing her to conceal from him, the concealer, her awareness of what he concealed. After the first contact, so light, so mute, between his soft lips and her softer skin had been established, high up in that dappled tree, with only that stray ardilla daintily leaves dropping, nothing seemed changed in one sense. All was lost in another. Such contacts evolve their own texture. A tactile sensation is a blind spot we touch in silhouette. Henceforth, at certain moments of their otherwise indolent days, in certain recurrent circumstances of controlled madness, a secret sign was erected, a veil drawn between him and her. Ada. They are now practically extinct at Ardis. Vaughn. Who? Oh, I see. Not to be removed until he got rid of what the necessity of dissimulation kept degrading to the level of a wretched itch.
Ach, Vaughn!
He could not say afterwards, when discussing with her that rather pathetic nastiness, whether he really feared that his avournine, as Blanche was to refer later in her bastard French to Ada, might react with an outburst of real or well-feigned resentment to a stark display of desire, or whether a glum, cunning approach was dictated to him by considerations of pity and decency toward a chaste child, whose charm was too compelling not to be tasted in secret and too sacred to be openly violated. But something went wrong. That much was clear. The vague commonplaces of vague modesty so dreadfully in vogue 80 years ago, the unsufferable banalities of shy wooing buried in old romances as arch as Arcady, those moods, those modes, lurked no doubt behind the hush of his ambuscades and that of her toleration. No record has remained of the exact summer day when his wary and elaborate coddlings began, but simultaneously with her sensing that at certain moments he stood indecently close behind her, with his burning breath and gliding lips, she was aware that those silent, exotic approximations must have started long ago in some indefinite and infinite past, and could no longer be stopped by her, without her acknowledging a tacit acceptance of their routine repetition in that past. On those relentlessly hot July afternoons, Ada liked to sit on a cool piano stool of ivoried wood at a white oil-clothed table in the sunny music room, her favorite botanical atlas open before her, and copy out in color on creamy paper some singular flower. She might choose, for instance, an insect-mimicking orchid, which she would proceed to enlarge with remarkable skill. Or else she combined one species with another, unrecorded but possible, introducing odd little changes and twists that seemed almost morbid in so young a girl so nakedly dressed. The long beams slanting in from the French window glowed in the faceted tumbler, in the tinted water, and on the tin of the paint box. And while she delicately painted an eye spot or the lobes of a lip, rapturous concentration caused the tip of her tongue to curl at the corner of her mouth. And as the sun looked on, the fantastic, black, blue, brown-haired child seemed in her turn to mimic the Mirror of Venus blossom. Her flimsy, loose frock happened to be so deeply cut out behind that whenever she concaved her back while moving her prominent scapulae to and fro and tilting her head, as with air-poised brush she surveyed her damp achievement, or with the outside of her left wrist wiped a strand of hair off her temple, Vaughn, who had drawn up to her seat as close as he dared, could see down her sleek encelure as far as her coccyx and inhale the warmth of her entire body. His heart thumping, one miserable hand deep in his trouser pocket, where he kept a purse with half a dozen $10 gold pieces to disguise his state, he bent over her as she bent over her work. Very lightly, he let his parched lips travel down her warm hair and hot nape. It was the sweetest, the strongest, the most mysterious sensation that the boy had ever experienced. Nothing in his sordid venery of the past winter could duplicate that downy tenderness, that despair of desire. He would have lingered forever on the little middle knob of rounded delight on the back of her neck, had she kept it inclined forever, and had the unfortunate fellow been able to endure much longer the ecstasy of its touch under his wax-still mouth, without rubbing against her with mad abandon. The vivid crimsoning of an exposed ear and the gradual torpor invading her paintbrush were the only signs, fearful signs, of her feeling the increased pressure of his caress. Silently he would slink away to his room, lock the door, grasp a towel, uncover himself, and call forth the image he had just left behind, an image still as safe and bright as a hand-cupped flame, carried into the dark only to be got rid of there with savage zeal. After which, drained for a while, with shaky loins and weak calves, Vaughn would return to the purity of the sun-suffused room where a little girl, now glistening with sweat, was still painting her flower, the marvelous flower that simulated a bright moth that in turn simulated a scarab. If the relief, any relief, of a lad's ardor had been Vaughn's sole concern, if, in other words, no love had been involved, our young friend might have put up, for one casual summer, with the nastiness and ambiguity of his behavior. But since Vaughn loved Ada, that complicated release could not be an end in itself, or rather, it was only a dead end, because unshared, because horribly hidden, because not liable to melt into any subsequent phase of incomparably greater rapture, which, like a misty summit beyond the fierce mountain pass, promised to be the true pinnacle of his perilous relationship with Ada. During that midsummer week or fortnight, notwithstanding those daily butterfly kisses on that hair, on that neck, Vaughn felt even farther removed from her than he had been on the eve of the day when his mouth had accidentally come into contact with an inch of her skin, hardly perceived by him sensually in the maze of the Chatal tree. But nature is motion and growth. One afternoon, he came up behind her in the music room, more noiselessly than ever before, because he happened to be barefooted, and turning her head, little Ada shut her eyes and pressed her lips to his, in a fresh rose kiss that entranced and baffled Vaughn. "Now run along," she said. "Quick, quick, I'm busy." And as he lagged like an idiot, she anointed his flushed forehead with her paintbrush in the semblance of an ancient Estatian sign of the cross. "I have to finish this," she added, pointing with her violet-purple-soaked thin brush at a blend of Orphrys scolopax and Orphrys viennii. "And in a minute we must dress up because Marina wants Kim to take our picture, holding hands and grinning." Grinning. And then turning back to her hideous flower.